All right, everybody, I am back. Now, I've had a bunch of people on the program. I've done several of these things. You listen to them, and I want to thank you guys for listening to the program. And as you know, I always bring on people that I like, that I find interesting, that I find funny, that I think you're going to like, know you're going to like, and the streak has continued. I think I know this gentleman. I think we've known of each other for quite a long time. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to an old friend, great comedian, Mr. Joey Callahan.
Hey, I like how you said, I always try to bring interesting people. Tonight will be the exception to that rule.
Yes, I wanted to break that streak quickly.
Yes, this will be the exception of the interesting rule.
So. Yeah, this is very similar to that Patriots team that got to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're a little similar.
And lost to the Giants. So,
so close. Hold on, let me put my phone on mute. There's nothing that says popular, like trying to do something where people don't bother you. Boom.
All yeah, right. Yeah, but believe me, I get that. Now, it's been a while since we've actually physically been in the same place. I was trying to figure
out exactly how long it's been, but it's been a month of Sundays. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the last time I saw you was, good Lord. I mean, I don't know if we saw each other in the 2000s. You know.
I think it may have been over 20 years, young yeah. Mr. Thomas.
It's been a long time. But fortunately, everything has been going. Things have been going well for you and for me, so we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I can't complain. I mean, my wife and children can, but I can't. So.
Yeah, they're going to be on next week, and
hold on.
It's good. It's an episode.
This is an intervention. Hold on.
Next week's episode is called "The Callahan Secrets."
John, don't watch alone.
In the criminal justice system, these stories about Joey Callahan.
So you've got that voice. You can pull that off. Yeah,
in the criminal now, one of the things I've done when I've had old friends on the program is I was surprised at how many things, because when you meet someone, you just essentially you just kind of start there and then you just go forward. I never knew, because I just had Keith Robinson on, I had Ralph on and some other people, and I did not know.
Am I your first white guy?
Actually, no.
Oh, okay. All right.
and I didn't know their origin stories because a lot of times when you start doing comedy, you just kind of just start hanging out, you do your shows, and you enjoy each other.
And if you survive the open mics, you start hanging. Nobody actually asked an origin story. That's an excellent point.
And I am curious. I mean, even people that I've known of for a billion years. I just wanted to know, because we started out in the same city. What year did you actually pick up the microphone for the first time?
I'm thinking it was like, I hadn't graduated college, so it was like 1988, 1989. Mm-hmm. I remember the first week I went on like second to the last. The second week I went on like kind of in the middle. And then the third week after we signed up, we all went to like that pizza place on Second Street. And I was just talking to Dennis Horan, and I just innocently said to Dennis Horan, I go, hey, how long before you can MC one of these open mics? And Dennis goes, oh, it's going to be a real long time. You got to really put your time in. And like a second later, the manager, whose name I can't remember, comes running in and he looks at me and goes, hey, Joey, do you want to MC tonight? So within 3 weeks, I had my first paid gig. I made $35. And a lot of enemies. Let me point that out. I was there into it 3 weeks and I was getting MC spots. So they were not happy with me. The guys have been there for a long time.
Oh, yes. They people get upset if if you make any kind of little bump. But I was when you what made you actually pick up the microphone for the first time? Because it tends to be a weird thing when comedians, we seem to be cut from this weird cloth. There's, you know, it's like when you choose to do this with your life, it, you know, it's one of those things where you go, that person's supposed, usually if the person becomes good and continues to do it, you tend to think, okay, maybe that person should be doing that. But what made you actually pick up the microphone for the first time?
I mean, I grew up in my aunt and uncle's bar. I mean, in it and around it. And I had all these family members who were really wickedly funny. And I was just drawn to storytelling. I come from a long line of storytellers, and they could hold court. And just growing up in a bar, we called it the tap room. It's just, that was the place. That was kind of like refuge. You know, my dad was always screaming at me or yelling at me or mad at me. I would go into the tap room and it was like a safe space. I guess my aunt was bartending. I could do my homework there and, watch the Munsters or McHale's Navy and just be there. And I just love watching people laugh. I love watching people who could make people laugh. And my uncles were those guys and they would be able to hold court. And I just wanted to do that. And as things went on, I started to see more and more stand-up. I would watch Richard Pryor or Carlin. I loved watching Tom Dreesen. I don't know if your listeners know who Tom Dreesen is, but he was just a powerhouse on The Tonight Show. And I used to stay up late to watch the comics on The Tonight Show. It's all I wanted to do.
So basically, other than the bar, we're pretty much the same guy. As you even mentioned some of the people that I because like, you know, you stay up and you watch The Tonight Show and you see, you know, like you said Tom Dreesen, and you see I used to watch Rickles, and I'd watch Rickles.
Of course, I loved Rickles. and then Rickles and Red Fox, and I'm just trying to think some guys that would come on. Buddy Hackett, would just kill, like murder. He would murderize them, as he would say.
because I even now watch some of the old roasts, I watched some of the old Rickles roasts. Obviously we were both kids when these came on, but I thought it was hilarious to watch that. Now, when was the first, cause I remember 89. So I started in 86. It was like right near the middle to the end of the comedy boom.
Yeah. We got in at a good time. We got on the exit. So yeah.
That was weird because it was just so strange. I think we kind of got our class of comedians kind of got spoiled a little bit because, you know, the comedy clubs were just full.
You worked every night. You really, literally, I mean, you wouldn't work for a lot of money. I mean, the Paul Solari $50 gig. I mean, if Paul Solari called me up today, I would say, Paul, what's it pay? He would still say, oh, it's $50. So it's Barney Weiss was another one. That was a cheapo. Yeah, I never worked at Comedy Factory Outlet. Did you?
Yeah, I did. I started out at the Works in January of 86. And a few months, I didn't even know that the Comedy Factory Outlet existed at that point. And I was like, and I would go, where does everyone else work out? And they go, yeah, how come you never at the CFO, man? And I go, what the hell is that? He goes, it's another club. I go, oh, how far away is it? Because I was a kid at the time. And he goes, we walked outside to go see that little alley right there.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's that close, you know, and that was a good place to go. What was your home club actually? I mean,
because it was the Works for the longest time. Yeah. And then Andy Scarpati he was like minor league ball. I mean, he would just work you. He had 12 clubs and he would just work you, and you just really learned what you're doing. And then I kind of observed guys that got stuck in the Philadelphia vacuum, where they only worked Philly. And for one reason or another, I went, I think it's getting a little dangerous to stay in one place too long. Big Daddy Graham, who I credit with this, took me on the road to him down south, like Richmond, Williamsburg. My God, we worked all over the South. And I was his middle. And he taught me the road. And so I got to go on the road. And then I eventually could come back and eventually work my way up to closer. I never say headliner because I'm a pleasant surprise. I don't think people come to see me, but they're like, hey, that last guy was good. So I prefer the term closer, but I got to work because of Big Daddy. I got to work Chicago. I got to work the Midwest, got to go to Europe. So, I mean, I got to do a lot of places, and it all started because Big Daddy Graham took me on the road with him.
Joey, you want to go on the road?
Anyway, top five movies where the chick is actually a guy.
He used to put me down the shore all the time, which I thought was hilarious.
Ollie, what was that club? Third in New York. What was that?
I'm trying to remember the name because it's been a million and a half years, but I used to love Ollie's working down there. God, I can't remember. I mean, it was, geez.
I remember them. They would like throw shot glasses at you if they didn't like or flick lit cigarettes at you.
Yeah, I remember going to a couple of places. I know it wasn't a big, Ed didn't put me there, but it was like, It was a place in Jersey where they would throw ketchup bottles at people.
Yeah, he had the Friendly. Remember the Friendly? It was just called the Friendly. It was by the airport, and that was a shithole too.
That's one of the funny things about about a comedy is the simple fact that I was talking to somebody else about this, a simple fact that essentially all comedians are kind of cousins because we have so many similar
war stories.
Yeah. it's no matter where you go, someone has had something thrown at them. Mm-hmm. You know, you've had ice cubes thrown at you. You've had cigarettes, as you said, thrown at you and all these kind of things. And I always talk about the fact that the first year of comedy essentially is hazing.
I called it, like, when I first got there at the Comedy Works, there was the table that I sat at and the cool table that the Paul Tompkins and the Adam McKays and the Dennis Horan sat at. Mm. And I, you know, one night I was, they said, hey, come sit at our table. So all of a sudden I was like the cool kid. And so there was a pecking order even among nerdy comics, I guess.
For those of you that are listening and are not watching, because this is going to be an audio. Joey just took a drink.
You were standing still. I was like, why aren't you, Anthony? Why aren't you moving a little bit?
Have you noticed that I haven't breathed in exactly 10 minutes?
Yeah, I was getting a little nervous about that.
It's a new technique I'm working on. That's my new closer, where I just stand there for the last 10 minutes, not holding my breath.
Yeah.
And then when I pass out, they all applaud. So as far as after you moved outside of Philly, as far as performing is concerned.
Yeah, I've always lived in Philly, but I mean, Philly's been a great place for me because the airport's right down the street in 95. You can get anywhere in 2 to 3 hours.
I'm curious though. It's like, because I don't have any kids. I have not been married, but you have, you're a father.
I am.
What was like being the traveling comic?
Well, the best story is my youngest, who's now 21, was 6 months old, and I did the Edinburgh Comedy Festival. So I flew to Scotland. I was there for a month and a half. And I remember getting off the airplane and seeing my wife and my sister actually was holding my youngest daughter. And I reached out for her, I go, Robin! And she didn't remember who I was. And it was like getting punched in the throat. So I really curtailed my road work and did a lot more writing. And, you know, it was a struggle, but I just couldn't be the guy who was never home and the kids didn't know who he was. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was a point during the pandemic, I actually thought, how bad could this COVID be? I got to get out of this house with these people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my chances with COVID because I definitely know they're going to try to kill me.
How do you line up your schedule? You know, because, you know, for the most part, we work on the weekends, mm-hmm. you know, and I know from.
Used to work on the weekends.
Yeah, we.
Before the Democratic hoax. Yeah.
Before the big lie.
Yeah. Right. You know, right before the big lie was the Democratic hoax. So, yeah,
because I know that I had problems with girlfriends. Because the vast majority of time I'm working, it's Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. You know, it's kind of hard to have date night on Thursday, you know, on Wednesday during the week.
And Tuesday is our special night.
it's like, it was just like a weird thing because you're someplace else and there's people staring at you, girls, you know, running up
to you. They used to, not anymore. I'm just an old guy now. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, some of us still, you know, I'm just kidding.
You still got it.
But it's just a weird thing to be traveling like that and to find the balance, you know, to find the balance of, you know, you did a good move making sure you stayed close to home, staying in your hometown. That makes our hometown. That makes sense.
Sure.
But I was always curious about people who were able to make that work. You raise a kid. You got the family, got the kid. Your kid's probably college age now.
I got one. My oldest is 25, living in Manhattan. Mm. Matter of fact, it's kind of cool. Last Monday, I was at Gotham Comedy Club, and you know, just bop over and say hi to her. And like, I'm in New York so much anymore lately. It just seems like people go, "Do you think Philly is a suburb of New York?" I'm like, "No, jackass. I think New York is a suburb of Philadelphia. That's what I think." So
how soon after that does the firing start from the weapons?
My pretty blue eyes. I throw them off balance with my pretty blue eyes. So,
Where do you, where, when you, have you ever gone to Los Angeles? Have you moved? Obviously,
New York is, I did that. I did the Los Angeles thing.
Did you move, or were you just doing some shows?
I just, it's just shows. And Joe Medeiros was the head writer of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And Joe actually graduated from my high school many years before I graduated. And I remember it was Archbishop Ryan High School for Boys. And I called the alumni office, and I got the one priest, Father Rene. I said who I was. He knew who I was. And he goes, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Joe Medeiros. I said, can I write him a letter, send it to you? Can you send it to him? He goes, nah, just gave you his home address. Just gives me Joe Medeiros' home address. He was still living in Philadelphia at the time. I wrote him a letter. Joe corresponded with me, hooked me up with a guy named Gene Perrin, who, if anybody wants to learn how to write jokes and write comedy, I urge them to find anything Gene Perrin wrote on writing comedy. Mm-hmm. And so eventually Joe moved out to Los Angeles to be with Leno full time. And when I was out there, he couldn't have been nicer to me. And he got me hooked up. I remember at one point, sound like I'm name dropping. I'm not, I'm just, it's a cool story. I was in a room. It was Joe Medeiros, me, Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, and Jimmy Brogan. And Leno introduced me to Seinfeld. And I said, hi, Mr. Seinfeld. It's nice to meet you. And Leno kind of like punched me and said to Seinfeld, hey, remember when we used to call Hope Mr. Hope? So that was kind of cool.
That's a pretty powerhouse room, my friend.
With the exception of one person that was in the room. Yes, you're right. I was the classic, one of these things is not like the other.
Did you have, it's really weird because we're Philly guys. Yeah. I moved out there during the night. I stayed out there the entire 90s. When you went out there, did you get the culture shock? Did it seem super foreign to you when you got out there?
I just thought it was like, I just thought it was funny because every, like they said, be different. And everybody had, I got this going on. I got that going on. My thing was, I've got nothing going on. I'm different. And and I would run into Philly guys and then, you know, stage time. But again, it's just a matter of people that they would help you or not help you. Like, it just, some people were happy to see you. Some people, like, what do you want? What's your agenda? That kind of thing.
That is that always struck me as weird because I remember there was someone who I don't want to say a name, but there was somebody out there.
What does it rhyme with?
It rhymes with I'm not telling you.
Does it rhyme with Saul Hopkins?
You know what? I lost contact with Paul in the mid 90s. We were both working at we were both working regular jobs, not at the same place. And he just kind of disappeared. And I think that's when he moved to San Fran. I think he was in, I know Patton was in San Francisco, and I know Blaine was in San Francisco. But
I think Paul went to Chicago. No, actually, I think Paul went right to L.A. I really do.
And that's the last time. I mean, every time we've run across each other, now it's been a quarter century, but the last time I ran across it, was, hey, what's going on, buddy? It was like that. But I never really, there was a couple of people out there who, like you were saying with the agenda, like, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? And I walked up to someone and not going to say any names, by the way. I'm not going to say any names. I walked up to the person and I was just saying hello. I was literally on my way someplace else. And I went to shake the person's hand and I thought we were, you know, I didn't think we were buddies or anything, but we were cool. And it was one of those, I don't have any writing jobs here right now. I'm like, I'm actually working on something else. I don't. I was just shaking hands at hi. We were from, you know, kind of the same place, kind of.
Now, was this a Philly person who moved out there?
I can't even do that.
Oh, okay. I'm fully wondering. Okay. Well,
you know, it's, this person is from if you dropped a dot on top of Philadelphia and drew a circumference of 200 miles. That person was within that 200 miles.
So when Blaine Kapach said to you that he didn't have any writing jobs for you, was it just like right out of the gate?
No, Blaine let me stay at his house.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, nice try, though.
I feel like it's like Agatha Christie, and then there was none. I'll start naming names.
he was actually very cool. Like, he let me stay at his place in San Francisco when I was out there. But it's just a weird thing because I know that, like, when I get things, if there's people around me that I know and I know they can do the job, then I'll just go, hey, you want to do this?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to ask me, you know.
But I think if I could, there's two kinds of people. There's the universe is plentiful and I have something. That means you could have something. But then there's also the scarcity type people that if Anthony Thomas has something, that means there's less in the universe for me. So I think those are the two camps.
Yeah, because there were some people. Literally, when I think about doing this program, I asked people. I was literally 2 weeks away from calling you because I had a list. Well, not calling you, but asking you to do the show because I was sure. I had a list of my friends that I wanted to have on the show, and so yeah, about 2 weeks because I have a I schedule everything.
Sure, you're always very organized.
So there were some people that I asked and. There were, you know, some of the couple, like maybe three out of like 6 billion big time me a little bit. And so I thought it was funny because they just I'm like, you really think nobody's listening to this is what I'm saying in the back of my head. I'm like, I don't think you understand what's going on here. So, you know, and then all of a sudden, like they were like, what? And then they start. and then all of a sudden I'm getting phone calls back. And because I don't really talk about that. I just enjoy the company, have the conversations, you know, and it was just kind of a funny thing. I never understood the concept of big timing someone, you know, I mean, big time anybody. I mean, cause that's a little bit arrogant, you know, but there's some people maybe that you don't think fit on the show, but you know, when somebody big times you and you know them, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also too, like, I just chalk it up to that show business. I mean, You know, when you did something and you go, hey, you're up for it again and you don't get it, you go, well, that's show business. That's just, you know, I'll just go work somewhere else. And you just try to not think about it. But yeah, I just never got the not being nice thing. That's one thing I never understood.
Yeah. I mean, well, I gotta, it's really weird. I mean, I was surprised at how many people that we know that, well, I shouldn't say surprised. That's not a good way to say it because they're actually pretty good people. But you know, most of the people that we started with in our particular area are pretty cool people. Even the ones that have gone on to do big things.
Sure.
So pretty cool people, which is a nice thing, Now you've been in the game for a while.
Long time. Yeah.
A long, long time.
I worked very hard to be the best kept secret in comedy.
Yeah. I'm trying to take that record from you. but what I was curious about was, when you've always worked clean, from what I could tell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely clean. I mean, I'm not intentionally doing it. It's just I just work the way I work, and I don't think about. I just don't think about it. I just do what I do, and I mean, I can do blue shows. I've done them, but it's just not. It's not who I am, really. I'm kind of a nerd in that regard.
Because I know that. When we start back then, the comedy works, I kind of worked like ridiculously clean there. And then at the comedy, at the CFO, because I started out working clean. I mean, I was 17. What the hell am I going to, you know, what F word? You know, come on. So, but when you, because essentially answering the question, because the question was, I know that if you work clean, you tend to have a wider variety of places that you can go.
Oh, you definitely double your work. As long as I always said, as long as you're clean and funny, you have to be equally funny as you are clean. Like, it has to be fun. It's like you're clean and funny. And I'm always like, I'd rather be funny and clean, I guess. I want to be funny. I want to work. That's all.
Did you do any of the college circuit? Did you get in any of that?
Yeah, I got out of college. I was still young enough where I could work the college circuits. And then you just know, you get to that, you shift in age where you go, okay, I'm too old for this. I don't want to do this anymore. They're annoying me. you want to smack them.
I still remember when I was way younger than the college crowds. Then I was the same age as the college crowds. Mm-hmm. And then I got around 30 and I went, yeah, it's enough of this.
Yeah, you just know. You just know. The problem is the money's so damn good. You go, oh, all right, I'll do this one more college and this is it. But it gets to a point where you go, it's over.
I would just like to say to the IRS, if they're listening, that I only made $12 per show. I did colleges. That's
what I would vouch for that. I've seen it
just $12, and actually cost $11 to get there. So if there's any kind of confusion in the future, I just want to make sure that
and you add back depreciation, and then it's a wash, really.
So now, when you go around now, how bad was the pandemic for you?
March 14th. I think most comics would remember that day. That's the day that everything shut down. I was working a theater in Long Island with, you remember Eddie McGonigal, right?
Oh, yeah, good dude. Yeah,
Eddie McGonigal. You should have Eddie on the guest. Eddie's just so angry about everything. He just fun to be on a car ride with. I can't imagine not being like, Ed, I'd like you to be on my podcast. I have my computer. I don't know if I can do the podcast on the computer. But he and I were working Long Island. And he says I said this. I don't remember if I said this, but it sounds like something I would say. I pulled up to my driveway and he was getting in his car. I go, well, Ed, we're out of show business. And he always reminds me of that. But that was the day it shut down. And the morons that said it'll be gone for 2 weeks. And it's just like, I'm like, nah, it's going to be longer than 2 weeks. So
isn't it the weirdest thing when you see something that literally affects everybody? I mean, it's just, it's not. You know, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017, 2018 season, you know, the whole city, the whole region, the rest of the country, that's nice. Hey, congrats. All right, that's great. Now on to my other stuff. But, you know, when you walk outside and you just see everybody with masks on and people acting like jackasses in the supermarket.
I was at the point now, I was the one that did the shopping for my family. And I remember, at the height of the pandemic, I'd be in a grocery store and there'd be four people in an aisle, but I wanted something in that aisle, but I wasn't sure if it was there. So I remember just yelling down, "Do you see any rigatoni?" Somebody inevitably go, "There's two boxes. Okay, I'll swoop back around." So
that is the weirdest thing. I've never, because when you watch a horror movie, you know, one of those old disaster movies that you'd see on Saturday morning television. And then you see the people tearing through the supermarket and getting into fist fights over, you know, one roll of discount toilet paper. And, you know, that was one of the weirdest things. I remember sitting in this, because the supermarket I go to was just very nice. Everyone's just so calm. And
Everybody was very polite at the Giant on Street Road in Feasterville, just outside of Philadelphia, where I grocery shop. So.
It's just a weird thing to see that. But I noticed that there are people, because you're leaving, you're going for a gig tomorrow, correct?
Where am I? Yes, I'm trying to think for a second. I have a corporate gig tomorrow. So, yeah.
Well, how are those for you? I mean, obviously, like I said, you work clean, obviously. But how are those? I mean, are those, because I've done some of those, but it's been a while. You know, how are those to you? I mean, when you compare them to, you know, your regular comedy club audience, you know, place where you just, you know, do your, you know, where you grew up, the soil you came from. How different are those for you?
Well, the secret of corporate gigs for me is because you just when you think is clean, like when we'll talk about the Dry Bar special about as far as point being clean, you got to be squeaky clean. So what the trick is, at least it's been for me, is make it as custom about them as possible. Like, interview the clients, get as much info, that Joan in accounting just become a grandmother for the 18th. She's got 18 grandkids. So, you know, and Bob in shipping with the lazy eye. And so you have to make it. You ever see that episode of The Simpsons when a Spinal Tap was playing in Springfield? And they're like, "Here we are in Springfield. We're playing," and he looks at his guitar. He's got Shelbyville. He goes, "I like Springfield. It's way better than Shelbyville." And everybody, "Hey, Springfield's better than Shelbyville." And that's what it's kind of like.
Yeah, it's like a clean roast almost.
Oh yeah, most definitely, most definitely. And that's what's been my success. learn about the product, make fun of their competition, hit them with things that are relative to Bob in accounting, Frank in shipping, do stuff like that.
And another thing about GM being lame.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. And then here's your check. Here's your huge check, your per diem, and the car to the airport, Mr. Callahan. So I'm like, all right.
Now, we want to talk about something really cool that I was really happy to see. I was looking at Facebook, and I'm scrolling down, and I see a familiar face.
Yes.
And it says, comedy special, Joey Callahan.
That's pretty cool, I have to admit.
And I literally gave a thumbs up to my laptop screen,
which is refreshing, because when people give me a finger, it's usually not the thumb.
Yeah, I was trying to clean it up a little bit. You know, you said the working clean's good, so I cleaned it up a little bit. Two thumbs up.
That's right.
Now that is really, really a cool thing to get your special. I mean, that
you were so nice, and you were just like, you were like, you're the generosity of excitement for me was so sweet and so nice. Like, just you like when you see like something that's just pure good. Mm-hmm. You were just genuinely happy for me. I was so flattered by that. Thank you.
Yeah. The thing is, just like we were saying, is like when you see people that, like, if you know somebody and you see something really good happen to them, I don't even understand the concept of not being happy about that. You know, because you know what the journey is.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, we both have our dear friend Julia Scotti. You knew Julia, didn't you?
Oh, I know. You know, I know everybody.
That's true. Julia was great on America's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. And she's got this documentary about her life. Mm-hmm. As a comedian, as a trans person, as a comedian. And I'm so happy for her. And she said that she had detractors. And I don't understand it, man. I just don't understand it.
That's one of the things I was always curious about, is, you know, I had Ralph on the show a little while ago.
How long have you had Ralph on? How long ago was that?
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, he's a good man, too. He let me do a guest spot. My first Saturday at the Comedy Works was because Ralph Harris said to the manager, Joey's cool. And that meant a lot. So he's a good man, too.
Yeah. I was talking to him about the stuff that he was doing. And I was telling, you know, and I was saying, I said to him, and he laughed because he liked the fact that I said that. It was, like I said, it was genuine. And I said, you know, whenever I see, I was using him in that specific example, but when I see anybody that I know personally that I like and who I respect do something good, to me, it's this similar feeling to watching like your hometown team make it into the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah. I mean,
that's what it felt like. Cause I was like, oh, Joey's got a special. That's real cool. You know, how was it, you know, and that's the thing I was wondering about, that because you've done TV before, but is this your first special, correct?
Yes. It's taken me 30 years to get a comedy special produced by Mormons. So that's, my next one's going to be produced by a Branch Davidian. So, yeah.
But, well, I have a couple of Buddhist specials coming out next week.
it's the same special, but it keeps coming back in a different form.
I'm going to write new stuff.
Right.
Now, where exactly did they film that thing? Because it looked good, man.
Oh, yeah. It was great. It was a high production value. So I flew out. My manager told me that they wanted to do the special. So I flew to Salt Lake City and drove to Provo, Utah. Mm-hmm. And Drybar, they say, and I don't have any proof or can't say that they're not telling the truth, they said over 1 billion clicks. So if you go to YouTube under Drybar, you get a taste of it, and then you can go to the Drybar app, and they just partner with Comedy Dynamics. So we're going to kind of see where this goes. So that would be cool.
They get a lot of views when they put clips on Facebook. I mean, a whole lot.
The clip they put up of mine, it's been on for a couple of days. It's got like 29,000 views. So,
exactly. You know, and it just, you know, I mean, that is, it's amazing how back when you and I started doing it, obviously people that like who did it before, like when Rich Scheidner did it, because I was joking with him because he started actually before the comedy boom.
Yeah.
And I was giving him a hard time because of that. And but we know that nowadays with the technology that we have now, you can shoot a special and get tons of views, and you're not on the network. You can literally pull these huge numbers without that.
How many times I don't know if you've had the same experience, but you go to a comedy club in another city, right? And they go, okay, the shows are going to be Wednesday, but Thursday we got a YouTube show coming in. So it's like this YouTube person. And I go, oh, really? And they go, oh, they sold out like 15 shows in one day. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. So yeah, there's a lot of people. The problem it's been from what I see is we kind of grew up and cut our teeth in the clubs. And we learn just like an apprentice, like you're going to be a carpenter. You're going to learn an apprentice. You're going to work your way up to journeyman and then a master plumber, carpenter, whatever the case may be. These YouTube kids, they just do YouTube and they don't get in front of people. And then they start making money at comedy clubs that they don't have the oomph to carry it through. They put the asses in seats, but you can only do that so long if you don't have the talent.
I was wondering because I've seen people who did something online and just, you know, like good, you look at the numbers, you're like, good gosh. And they sell out the place, but they have, you know, doing 16 takes in front of your phone or your camera is a little different. And not to denigrate that because it's difficult to go and do what they do. But
well, I gotta say that there's a YouTuber, Facebooky guy out there that people love that person's little vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched them do stand up, and I'll be honest with you, it was a train wreck. But yet that person is putting asses in seats because of their Instagram, YouTube-y kind of thing. So
it's really weird how you have different pieces, and if you can get the two pieces together, mm-hmm. you have the perfect unit. Like they can't do what you can do. They can't stand on the stage, hold up a mic, and make strangers laugh for an hour.
Right. You know who's actually really good at that is, I have to say, Adam Ferrar. Adam Ferrar has a great podcast, much like yours, and he puts asses in seats. He's a good-looking guy, very funny, though. Like, he's got the look, but he's got the talent, which is very, like we said, very rare to have them both come together.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. It's like I've seen so many times – I was always wondering, it's like, remember when Charlie Sheen had his problem with the TV program?
Sure.
And he's at the Fox Theater with 5,000 people in there. And they're going, you going to do something? You know, because he's a funny guy, but funny in television and funny for a couple of minutes is not funny for 60 to 75 minutes, knowing how to pace, how to write, how to layer. You know, how to work the audience, how to work a room that's that big, how to keep them all paying attention and to do it consistently. That's a whole different thing. If I was one of these YouTube cats and I knew I could move bodies like that, I would name the show after myself, add the word presents to it, and then bring on comics that actually knew what the hell.
Oh, yeah, I would totally agree with you. Yeah.
You know, but they're like, hell no, I'm not paying anybody. I'm not paying anybody.
Now, well, you know what? If you think about it, something very simple, and I do this all the time and it was done for me. You've got a show and you spots open, you want to grab your buddies because you got to travel with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I grab Eddie McGonigal all the time. And I, with the exception of, for some reason in his development, Eddie's 56 years old now. Eddie was never told to close his mouth when he chews his food. And it I'm like, call your mouth. You're a 56 year old man. Call your mouth. And he, nom, 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 nom.
All I'm saying right now is all you got to do is get your camera, film that viral video. So then you'll have a special and a viral video.
Yeah, Eddie's special.
I want to get back to your special here, bro.
Please.
Now when you're filming this thing, now did you film one show?
So I got there Thursday, and Friday they were filming a special, so they did two shows. So two different audiences, and I wanted to get a feel for the joint. So my special was being taped on Saturday, and it's a little nerve-wracking, and it's all about what you say to yourself. But like they would, they scared you. Like, this is a Mormon audience. You can't use God's name in vain. Like we said, I wore clean. I was getting like, oh crap. I'm like, as soon as I wear clean, but as soon as you tell me you can't, I'm saying the C word. You know, I'm like, I didn't mean to say that. I'm sorry. So, but by the second show, I kind of calmed myself, and I had a much better second show than first show.
Now, have you, this is going to sound like a weird question, but it's not, because I know people that don't. Did you sit down and just analytically stare at your special and watch it and break it down? That's from show one, that's from show two, that's from show one, that's from show two.
Yeah, I did it too. I mean, like, I'm doing it now where I can see my reflection. I can see myself in the camera, and I just keep thinking, mother of God, do I look like my father? Like, I move a certain way, and it's my father, the way my father moves. And it's just like, oh man, that is getting older. It's just like, oh my God, I used to be young and good looking. Now I'm just good looking. But yeah, that was.
Okay, now he's trying to give himself, he's trying to say he was good looking now. Like, try that on somebody else. No.
Before the kids.
But what was going through your mind? I mean, how far out from the actual special did you know that it was? I mean, what was going on when it was actually in the works? How did you know? I mean, did it just pop out? It didn't just pop out of nowhere.
So my manager, I'm with Omnipop and Tom Ingenio, who's a grumpy old bastard who I love, and he presented it to them, and they liked me, and so they said, okay, this is the date, and you have to. They send you a whole video, like, hey, comedian, you're going to be shooting a comedy special, and I know you think you're clean, but let me show you what Provo clean is, and then I'm like, holy mackerel, you're like. All the things you can't do, and it just really screws with you. So you just kind of—I don't know—it's like it's an English paper. You just learn how to write the English paper the way the professor wants the paper written. Best way to describe it.
When you looked at what they said clean was, like I said, you were clean. We know this. When they said clean, and you think of your clean, their clean, how close were you to their clean? How much? I mean, what would you say your percentage was?
I had to drop a gear. I'm not going to lie to you. Mm. I do this joke about my daughter. When my first daughter was born, my wife's a little thing. She's like 5'2", weighs 106 pounds. She gave birth to a 9-pound, 4-ounce, 24-inch little girl naturally. Typically, when I say that, the audience kind of gasps. And I just kind of tag it with, are you sure you're nothing that big ever went in? Like, that was too dirty for them. And don't get me wrong, that's a smart dick joke, but I couldn't do something like that.
That's the funny thing is you could have done that on television, on regular television.
Yeah, exactly.
Easy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I couldn't do anything about the drinking stuff. Like, I have a whole segment of drinking beer and wine and whiskey and everything. I couldn't do any of that. So I did a lot of old stuff, believe it or not. I went back to my notebooks and I got some of the old stuff I did back in the Comedy Works days. And I kind of had to relearn how to do those jokes into the rotation.
How many, okay. So what was the turnaround time between, okay, I'm going to do this, to actually heading out?
Oh my gosh. It was so, well, now keep in mind, it was February of 2020, right? Mm-hmm. We know what happened March of 2020. So it finally came out last week. So it's been a good year and a half. Matter of fact, the comments on YouTube, it's just like, I know I'm getting older, but it was like, he looks like John Cena's dad. If John Cena was an old guy, my favorite one, John Cena in a fat suit. That was my favorite one. So, and the other argument was, I do a joke about my daughter, who at the time was 23, is now 25. Mm-hmm. I said, I have a daughter. She's a millennial. So I said, daughter, she's 23. She's a millennial. People are running. That's, if she's 23, she's not a millennial. Like, they're calling me on it. Like, I have no answer for you. Like, what's the matter with you people?
Yeah, that's the funny thing is now it's out there. Your profile has been raised, and because your profile has been raised, you know, it's like it's like Icarus City. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I gotta say, I mean, I would say 9.5 out of 10 comments were nice people. But I would go back at the negative ones, and independently, both my daughters called independent of each other. and told me to stop stop arguing with the people in YouTube. I'm like,
yeah, you can't win that one, because once they realize they're getting some attention.
Oh yeah,
it's like, oh yeah.
and I am of, being a Philly guy, being a kid from Fishtown, I'm of the, I'm going to get the last punch in. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to get the last punch in, and I'm just going to keep coming. And it's just a whole other dynamic. You're right. They love that. They want you to. They're dying to argue with somebody.
How many, when you were restructured, you had to do a slight restructure,
yeah,
on your set. How many, I mean, how long did it take you? Because it doesn't, to people that are listening, when you have to change your act, you have a comedic, I'm talking to the audience, you have a comedic muscle memory, and you kind of have to have that because you have to be able to reproduce this result because that's how you pay bills. You have to be, and you need to be trustworthy to the bookers and things of that nature, and also to the audience, because they have to know what they're getting, and they expect a certain level of quality. So he's gotten to the point where he knows how to write a joke, and you know he's perfected this thing, and then all of a sudden someone goes, yeah, we need you to tweak that. what you've been doing for 30 something years, we need you to change that a little bit. So how many times, I mean, did you put the set together that you were going to do in Utah and perform that 30 minutes just again and again and again and again and again as a unit?
No, I didn't. I'm sad to say, because there's no places, first of all, where you can just go and do a guest set. And I'm working on the weekends to pay money and pay the bills. Mm-hmm. So I have to do my 45 minutes to an hour. So I would, you know, like when you read a book and you highlight certain words in each chapter, that's what I kind of did. I kind of, like, if you looked at all the words in my act, certain parts would light up in my brain. Like, okay, skiing bit. Okay, Johnny Bench pitchback machine. You know, like just certain things that you would pop up. And then I remember being in the hotel room Thursday to Saturday with a notebook, writing everything down, rewriting everything, writing, reading, writing. And then going on and just kind of pacing myself, listening to the laughter, not rushing through it. So.
That is just I just remember, and it's a very similar thing. I remember I was doing a television program for cable. I didn't have any, and at this time I was working every weekend, every night, doing like real sets, and I had to get this five right. So, and I had to get it on tape. So I literally would. I walked on stage. I said, look, I'm gonna introduce myself again, and you better be nice to me. And I walked off and introduced myself again, walked back up and put that five in front in front of the regular set, and then kind of said thank you, good night, as a joke. But what I was really doing was saying thank you, good night, so I could edit the tape.
Yeah, well, you had the prowess to be able to do the editing. Most of us don't have that.
Oh God, it was back then. The technology back then. But now it's like click, click. Yeah, that's done.
Yeah, it's like I remember being on the reel and like cutting it out and everything. Yeah.
No, I'm not that old, Joey. I'm a young man. I really don't know what you're talking about.
When you first got your first I screwed that up. What was the old? Thank you. That's the word. Thank you.
I had to look that up on my phone. I really don't know what that is. I had to look it up on my phone.
Noted.
As we're talking, because I'm a very young man and I don't know what you're talking about when it comes to these things.
That's the thing I never understood, like getting older, like we are, and it's all relative. Like, mm-hmm. if somebody in their 70s, we're young. Mm-hmm. Someone in their 20s, we're old. I mean, it's all relative, and it's just like, I don't feel old. I mean, I know a lot more shit and I've got a lot more money than when I was younger, mm-hmm. but I'm still that kind of person. I don't know what your approach is with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, it's like, if you don't have any real health problems, I mean, I'm not talking about the crap that happens just because, like, you get a little older, your knee, you know, you go to the gym instead of being able to, you know, run the next day, you have to run the next day after that. I don't care about those things. You know,
yeah.
That means nothing to me. It's like, I'm 52, you know, so, you know, I'm not 25. But I don't feel like what I thought 52 was going to feel like. I'm going, I thought
exactly.
I can run up the steps. I mean, like when my grandnephew comes, I can pick him up and run around with him. I put him on shoulders, run up and down the hill. I thought it'd be like, anyway, son, you know. But 52, almost 53, does not feel like that. I mean, my voice doesn't even sound any different.
You know, I mean, next Saturday I'll be double nickels, and I'm like, you know what? I don't feel double nickels, and I gotta say, as I get older, I like nice things. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like putting up with BS from people. I tend to get very impatient, whereas a younger man, I might put up with it, and I'm like, I don't have tolerance right now.
Well, yeah, well, funny thing about when you pass 50 is you have just enough physical ability to do everything you want, but you also know all the stuff you just do not feel like doing, you know, and so you just don't do those things, you know, is, you know, I was just completely surprised. And for the record, 55 is very, very old, Joey. I'm closer to 60
than I am 50. So I'm right in the middle.
Yeah, I'm only going to be turning 53 at the end of the year. So that's a whole different thing.
You're a wee lad.
That's a whole different thing. I just want to say right now, that's a much younger man.
Yeah, but you're single. So that means 50 is the new 30. Yeah. I'm married with kids. That means 50 is the new 80. So.
I was going to. And by the way, his special is called
The Notorious FOD, Father of Daughters.
His next special will be called 50 is the New 80.
My prostate's the size of a grapefruit. That will be my next special.
So this special was just came out
last Saturday. Yeah. And for your listeners, if you'd like, you can go in the Dry Bar app and use the promo code Joey Callahan and get 7 free days. And what I've been telling people to do is use my name, get the promo, watch the special, and then cancel. That's what I would tell you to do.
Well, I've already put your website and the link directly to your special in the notes.
Oh, awesome. So I always do these podcasts, right? I'm always kind of curious, what other countries have you gotten people talking? Like, I've done podcasts where they're not big in their own country, but they're huge in Australia, that sort of thing.
I mean, which country is the biggest?
Yeah.
Oh, it's still the United States. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, obviously Canada, UK, Australia, France, Philippines, for some reason. I don't know what the hell's going on. I was like, there's got to be a fluke.
Nope, there's probably not a lot to listen to in the Philippines. So.
I think I'm in about 15 countries.
Yeah.
15 countries. The United States is the biggest because this is my second podcast. I have another podcast where it's just me and I tell stories and things of that nature. And that one was the original podcast. And that one started to blow up a little bit. And then it, you know, grew from there. And then when I started to do this one, the audience was almost all like 99% United States. So those people have gravitated over to this one too. So because of that, you know, it used to be the other countries and was kind of like a little, the United States was a little bit bigger. And then those people go like, oh, you got another one, huh? Well, let's go listen to that.
That's cool.
And then then all of a sudden it was like, and I remember looking at it and going, the hell is this? You see this gigantic, I'm like, the hell all these people come from? I didn't think anybody, you know, I hadn't even started really promoting the damn podcast. I was just, you know, getting it ready. And all of a sudden, you know, I was like, oh, okay. Hi guys.
That's great. How much interaction are you having with the listeners? I mean, I'm sure you're getting emails and responding and they'll tell you what guests they like and what guests they didn't like.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the funny thing about it is this podcast here is very much like, oh yes, we really enjoy this person. The other one, I get nudity sent to me. I was sitting there going, I know I tell stories about my life and things of that nature, but you know, if I say anything about, if I mention in a comedy sketch a relationship, without question, within the next 3 days, it will be. It's like, you know, I was getting women from New Zealand and Australia and Ireland would be like, like, what is with these? You know, I mean, because when women send pictures of themselves sunbathing, it's wrong. I really wish that they would stop doing it because I really don't enjoy seeing really, really attractive naked women. That's wrong and it needs to stop.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the way God made them. Please, ladies, don't listen to Mr. Thomas. Send him all the news that you'd like to. And particularly cesarean scars. He's really a big fan of that whole genre. So do that first.
Funny thing is, I know you're joking, but guess what?
I know I'm joking too, but guess what?
But that was another friend was on, and he found out about that and was giving me a hard time. Like, yeah, so I said, what? Look at this. He goes, oh, okay, you know. And I was in the process of delete, but somebody was sitting there next to me at the machine. So what do you think about now that you've done that 30 on the special? Okay, have you put that in the vault?
I've got it on the shelf, and I'm trying to work past it now. I mean, it's a weird time right now, brother, because we don't have the places to go out and try. Like, I've got my notebook out, and I've got the ideas, the thoughts. I mean, we just had a situation where we have a yellow lab, and I grilled up steaks for me and my wife, and I put the steaks on the counter. I got my wife. I come into the kitchen, and there's the yellow lab on the counter eating one of the steaks. And my wife just looks at me, and I just innocently go, "I can't believe that dog ate your steak." And so I went, "Okay, write that down. That's good." I'm finding jokes are coming out that aren't intentional. So I think part of the joke writing process is listening to the kind of the zen of saying something funny and remembering what you said.
Isn't it one of the worst feelings when you know, because you've been around and I've been around long enough to know when you hit it, when an idea comes to you, 8 times out of 10, you know that one's going into the act. When you go, oh, that's it. I gotta knock a couple edges off of that, but that's in. And then there's some bits where you go, I know there's something there, but you know, let me write it down just to, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I'm gonna write it down on the show. I've gotten to the point now where this is what I do now, because I used to carry a notepad in my pocket, but my phone's huge now. So you know, these phones keep getting bigger. I have the recording app on my phone, and I automatically record it into the phone and then send it to the Google Drive automatically.
That's smart.
Because one of the worst feelings, and I know it's had to have happened to you, and any comics listening, I know it's happened to you as well. You have a bit, you're going, this bit is so good, there's no way I'm going to forget it. I'm going to take this kid to the doctor's office, get that done, get this kid, you know, and by now, when I get home, I'm going to write it down, and that's it. And you go home, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst feeling in the world.
You know you're never going to get it back. Odds are it's gone.
And that's the beautiful thing about these phones. That's one of the age of information that we've got is you got to do it. I mean, Google Doc, boom, here's the joke, boom. And just like it could be a sentence, just enough to remind you what the hell it was.
You know what else? Another trick I've learned is, which is, it's great. Get some headphones for your phone.
Mm-hmm.
That way, you literally, because you know sometimes you don't want to say a joke into your phone with 18 people around you, right? Because they're looking at you like, oh, jackass. But what I started to do is I put the headphones in, I plug it into the phone, and I act like I'm having a conversation, but I'm really putting a bit into the phone and then sending it off to the cloud.
Smart.
Yeah, because if people think you're having a conversation, their first inclination is to go, idiot, and then ignore you. He talks too loud, loser. And they just stop listening to what you're saying. But if you do that, then that way nobody's paying attention to what you're saying. You know, I got to ask you this. Now, the special came out, you said Saturday, correct?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay, so when you started to see, because like I said, I know sometimes it takes weeks to see the effects of the special. Have you started to see the effects of the special yet?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing a bunch of press with it, which mm-hmm. is cool. And thank you again for having me on the podcast. It's great to reconnect with you. It's been a long time. But I'm noticing like I'm getting more Twitter followers at Joey Callahan on Twitter. My Instagram, Joey Callahan Comedy, I'm getting more followers. I just did a radio show in the Finger Lakes this morning because the disc jockey saw me on Dry Bar and wanted me to come on and do their Friday Funnies. We taped it today. So things are starting. I hope they continue to happen.
Mm. I saw you have the clip in the trailer. Do you have any, because actually you can't put so many clips up because it's like you want to watch the whole special, obviously.
Sure.
But do you have any other clips of stand-up that you would like people to see that are out there? Obviously, maybe like YouTube or something like that.
Yeah, so my YouTube channel, Joey Callahan Comedy, and you've got just enough to kind of wet your whistle. And I was talking to my manager because if we get through this thing, there's a comedy festival in Ireland and the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Having done the Edinburgh Fringe in Scotland, I like to go back to, I would love to perform in Ireland is where I really would like to work. And so I'm hoping that we can kind of gather that. I just want us to get us out of this damn thing. And I just want to say, I don't care about your politics. I'm not talking politics, but please, everybody get vaccinated just so we can go back to our normal life. Please. I'm begging you.
Yeah. So obviously I don't have to ask that question.
Yeah.
Which one did you get? I got Moderna.
I got smallpox, rubella. I've got polio. Oh yeah. And the new one.
I didn't even have any side effects, which was hilarious.
I got sick like a minor flu like symptom the second one, but I went to bed early, and my wife called me a P word, and then I woke up, I was fine.
That's when you know you've been married for a long period of time, and she doesn't even have to sugarcoat it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Just walks up, you little stronger. Yeah. Because my sister called me up. She goes, oh my God. Oh my. And I don't want to laugh, but it put her down hard, and she hates needles. So,
hey, God bless her for doing it. She stepped up. That's important.
Yeah. Well, she's in healthcare. So, you know,
she still did it. You know, yeah. I know a lot of nurses that aren't doing it, which I completely dumbfounded by a person of science wouldn't want to get the vaccine.
The second they said it was available, I jumped in the ride and slid right on down.
Where did you get your vaccine?
VA hospital.
Cool. Yep. Now, thank you for your service.
Oh no. That's just where it was. I don't want to say I wasn't in the
army. I know you can't talk about it. I know. You're still undercover. You still have your security clearances. Like I shouldn't even have brought it up.
I just want to let you know right now, I really have not been a comedian for the past 35 years. I've been SEAL Team 20. And, I wasn't in the military. It's just that, well, I have relatives up, but it was just that just happened to be where it was at the time. You know,
well, I got mine at the TLA on South Street.
The TLA,
yeah, how about that, huh?
What the TLA in Philly? Oh my god, that's where Dice made that special, which is hilarious.
Well, there was something really comforting when you walked in there, right? And first of all, it's the neighborhood. I mean, we the Laugh House, you know, just Barney's Joint, the Going Bananas, like. And you walk in there, there's just something really comforting about the smell of stale beer, and you go, oh, okay, I'll be fine.
So you get in TLA, you get out, and you're going, I just wanted the shot. I got tattoos, and okay. For those of you at home. There was a little bit of a hiccup there, but we're back. And what is the
are we live?
No, we are not live. This is recording for later on.
Okay. Okay, cool.
So you said you got your shot at the TLA. What I wanted to touch on before I let you go, because I want to ask you about that. That was one thing I wanted to ask you about, is when you were performing overseas, you know, at the Fringe and things of that nature. What was that? What was that actually like when you were performing overseas like that?
It was great. I mean, it was intimidating at first, but then in the rhythm crowd, and you're kind of a specialty act because you're an American. There's really not a lot of Americans here. There were Australians, Canadians, people from the UK, people from South America, South Africa. So, you know, an American was kind of a little unique. And I had people come to the show just out of the fascination that an American was performing there. Rich Hall is huge in Europe. Rich Hall, he's been living there now for the past 20 years and more so, I think. And they love Rich Hall over there. So I just kind of rode off of his coattails.
That is just a fascinating thing, because I've always it seems stand-up comedy has gotten so global. You see Chris Rock did his big special. Kevin Hart did his special. Emo Phillips was over there. As you said, Rich Hall was over there. Franklin Ajay was over there. There was a lot of people. Was it Tom Rhodes?
Yeah. Oh, Tom Rhodes has got more passport stamps. It's amazing. But who's the kid from Boston that I like a lot? Ball headed fella. Burr.
Bill Burr.
Yeah. Burr. And I love those Boston comics. I just, the Lenny Clacks and the Don Gavins and the Kenny Rogersons and the Mike Donovan. I just love those guys. And, they all go over to Ireland. They all go over to England. So yeah, they work well.
It's just really an interesting thing that now, obviously, English speaking countries, people, the world has shrunk because, you know, YouTube and things of that nature, podcasts and internet radio and things of that nature. Now everybody, you know, you don't even have to explain the references. You know, you can just talk about what you want to talk about, almost as if you're, from what I've seen, I haven't been over there yet. I will at some point.
I got to say, Eddie Izzard, mm-hmm. I'm so impressed with him that he learned French just so he could do a show, a stand-up spot in French. He's doing it in German now. So I'm very impressed with him as far as his degree of intelligence and learning languages.
That is someone who, you know, it's impressive when you see that. I mean, first of all, just to be able to learn another language just in general, because after you're an adult, that's impressive right off. And then the nuances of doing stand up and all. That's someone who likes the high degree of difficulty, because whenever you have a high degree of difficulty when you're doing something, the satisfaction of sticking the landing in that thing.
Yeah, most definitely.
Is incredible. Is incredible. All right, Mr. Callahan,
Is that time?
Yeah.
It feels like we've just been talking for like 2 minutes. It's been so long. Let's not do this again in 30 years.
Yeah, I think
let's do it again sooner. Now, hey, where are you working? Are you performing anywhere?
I have not picked up a microphone in a while, and I was just about to start performing again, and then this thing called COVID-19 showed up. So I got a stack of material here that I want to say in front of people, but I got to do some showcase nights.
You were always very funny, so it's a shame. Yeah, you were always very funny, so you definitely we gotta get past this and get you going back on stage.
Yes, sir. Now, my friend, I want to thank you for coming on, man. It was been a blast talking to you, my brother. And like you, I said, I'm going to link up all of your stuff into the notes for the show.
That's awesome. You guys be, hey, and remember, if you like this episode, please send young Mr. Thomas a nude picture of yourself, please.
You know what? I changed my mind. Yes, send all the nudes now. All right. Take care,
all right, brother. Be safe. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, take care.
Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, now that was fun, wasn't it? Told you. What did I tell you? Have I failed you yet? No. Will I fail you? Also, no. Thanks again for all your support. Much love to everybody, and I'll see you again next time. Take care.